Well, okay, we're about to kick off an all-new issue of Geek in the City Radio, which comes to you free every single Tuesday. You can watch and stream us at YouTube. Just search up for Geek in the City. Facebook Live, of course, Geek in the City. But our preferred place is check us out over on twitch.tv/Geek in the City. You can watch us live. You can engage in the chat. We try to respond as often as possible when people are live with us in the chat, because that just makes it a lot of fun. If you're not able to catch us live every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, well, the podcast goes up also free on Wednesdays, sometimes Thursdays, because, you know, life happens at times. As always, this show will always be free to you, the listener. All we ask is that you please share and give us 5-star reviews on any of your podcast aggregate of choice or our Twitch channel, whatever is required. And, of course, please show our sponsors some love. They're the ones that keep us going. They have believed in us in a long time, just like you have. So, with all of that out of the way, here we go. We're going to kick off an all-new issue of Geek in the City Radio.
Why, hello, and welcome to issue 728 of Geek in the City Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Aron Duran.
I'm one of your other hosts, Bean Arita.
And I am your other host, Cable Hashitani.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I kind of spaced at what time we start. I realize that's very dumb, but I did.
It's fine.
I mean, I guess it would be. I don't know why I forgot my microphone. Clearly, we're all having a day. It would be one thing if you just like outright forgot what time the show is, but you just were under the understanding that the show is now a different time.
Well,
and
I know
it's not like
we talked off mic about maybe just moving it to 7, because I feel like we all end up being rushed when it's at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
And since we always schedule guests at 7, when my brain saw Google Invite with our guest coming up at 7, I went, oh, yeah, right, I got time.
Gotcha.
That's what my brain did.
It happens.
I actually have had a wonderful day. I had a rare, because of schedule stuff, I had an extra day off this week, and I spent it doing fun things.
Nice.
Yeah, I went for a 10-mile bike ride on the Sweetwater Loop.
Mm-hmm.
So from like Selwood Bridge to Steele, which was lovely. Then I had some coffee. And then I had lunch at Dos Hermanos.
Oh, their new cafe?
Yeah,
like,
on Stark.
Like sandwich place.
Oh, because they do chop sandwiches, which are some of my favorites.
Mm, and I got to get down there.
So good. Then I got a parking ticket. I had to go back to my house, my apartment. I had a couple hours. Got a parking ticket because they're cracking down on that now.
Great.
Yeah, you were telling us all about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally got one. I have no ability to buy a neighborhood parking pass. I live in G and or N, depending whenever they decide. Because I have tried to go to ODOT or PBOT's site.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think my address is real. Because they clearly haven't updated their maps. My building's almost 2 years old. I can't buy one.
Here's the thing about...
By the way, those two districts, even if I could, yeah. G or N, $895 a year to maybe,
Jesus,
if you're lucky, find street
Christ.
Parking in that neighborhood.
Wow.
Only in these zones, not in the metered parking. So
right.
Out of like a 8-block area around my building... 20% are able to be used for permit parking. They're the two most expensive spots in the city, by the way, because of the industrial. I don't know why, but they are.
Because they won't build fucking parking. I'm sorry. I have long never understood why the city of Portland...
It's not... exclusive to Portland, by the way.
I realize that. But I do not understand why the city of Portland has not purchased the flat top parking lot next to Portland Storage. On MLK, that used to be next door to the Montage where it was.
Mm-hmm.
That parking lot and City Liquidators uses it.
Yeah.
I would have bought that, turned it into a 6-story smart park. So that all the neighborhood businesses could, their staff and customers could park there.
Right. And it's like, well, we're trying to reduce vehicles. Well, great. But you're not actually making the city bike friendly.
Yep. And
you're just making angry motorists.
If you want to make the city have fewer cars, then make the buses free and run them 24 hours a day.
Transit well, should that's not gonna be happen. Free.
I guess $8.50 a year boils down to about $70 a month, which I think is actually... Well, if no, I can pay no, it monthly, let me take that. It. Let me take yeah. that back. I was saying that's actually pretty decent for like you know, for a paid parking spot in a garage,
correct?
Not street parking. Oh, not street that's parking. Bullshit.
In my building, it's $2.50 a month for a spot.
That's fucking, robbery.
Yeah.
Like $70 is what my building charges.
And the a, fact that
and
that's
hold on, there's an open lot across the street. You guys know where I live. There's that.
Yeah, there's like a bank.
Yeah. ZoomCare.
No, but on the other, if you were on the across MLK side.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
there's no, a building there, and next to it is this open lot with a chain link fence with a fence door that never closes.
Oh, no, that part of the map is unrendered.
Yeah.
Never seen it.
You're not missing anything. It's a gravel lot with a chain link fence that doesn't close.
Yeah.
It's $178 a month.
Jesus Christ.
For an open lot.
For just a gravel.
A gravel pit.
Cool. No, the fact that it is legal to rent apartments and not provide adequate number of parking spaces and also to charge egregious amounts of money in addition to the monthly rent for those parking spaces is just absolute bullshit. It's that should not be legal. If you have built a society where everyone needs a fucking car... then you need to be accommodating people's cars in your living neighborhoods, in your residential areas.
This is not a Portland-centric problem. You are correct. Mm-hmm. This happens everywhere. This is happening in Portland specifically because of former mayor Charlie Hales.
Yeah.
Charlie Hales was mayor when suddenly there was a, like...
Is that the big apartment boom?
Yes, that was the big apartment boom. Specifically, the big apartment boom with no parking.
Yeah.
Specifically for this reason, to force people to do exactly what they're being forced to do now.
That's this the same was thing as when people started designing bigger roads in cities to deal with the traffic. No, you've just invited more traffic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like statistically, that is all that you've ever accomplished.
Yeah. It's the cargo pants paradox.
I haven't seen a parking space, parking space included with an apartment since 2002. Yeah. My very first apartment, technically.
So we had that condo off Sacramento. Well, that wasn't a parking space. Your spot was a deeded spot because the condo came with a deeded, so that doesn't count.
Deeded?
Deeded. The spot is deeded to your... That's what it's called.
I know that's what it's called.
It's still silly sounding.
It sounds ridiculous.
Deeded. You're right. The last time I rented a place that came with a parking, just a spot, was when Becca, Carrie, and I lived in Lake Oswego in 2000 and part of 2001.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the only time.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. This doesn't count living in like a board collective out in BFE Hillsboro where, you know, they're like, yeah, there's a spot, but you still may end up being half a mile away.
Sure.
In this hive, you know.
When you said board collective, I thought you meant the assimilation cube on Burnside.
Right. No, those are for city. In the suburbs, you just get, you know, the sprawling two-story... It's just like acres of apartments and their parking lots that just, like, meander.
The Intel acres.
Yep.
Filled with people that think they're Neo from The Matrix.
Just a reminder to all of our listeners, this is an election year. If you want to do something about any of these topics in your... in your municipality, whether that's Portland or not, get out and vote.
Yeah.
Find the candidates that align with your values, vote them into office, and then once they're in office, don't let up. Make sure that they do the job that you elected them to do.
Portlanders, remember to not vote for Rene Gonzalez and then laugh at him when he loses.
Fuck Rene Gonzalez. Mock him. Don't vote for him. Don't vote for Mingus Maps. Fuck them all.
No. But just, you know, Don't walk by him slowly, because he'll feel accosted.
Oh, man.
Never mind, I can't say something.
The audacity to make a claim like that when there are cameras on the bus.
That and they release the footage saying, this is someone accosting you. You are a snowflake. You
doesn't
are,
even look like intentional contact, let alone an act of aggression.
Nope.
It's so dumb.
And you know, there was never any investigation follow-up about his parents' cars being firebombed.
Of course not.
No, because he lies. He lies about everything. Everything. That's not even the opinion of the show. It's a fact.
Just yes.
Come at me, Renee. You chuckle fuck. I hate him so much.
I know. I know you do.
Like,
and it's
I don't even loathe 45 as much as I loathe Rene Gonzalez.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, because I just I do. Yeah. I actually do. Mainly because he probably has more direct impact on the day-to-day life of the city.
There you go.
And Rene Gonzalez has gotten people killed.
Hey, this is Aron here. In the spirit of and inspired by whenever Robert Evans has to chime in and make a correction of something he said, that's what I'm going to do right now. I want to add that while I do believe that Rene Gonzalez is a horrible person and is a boil on the butt of humanity, to quote Steel Magnolias, Natch, he is not directly responsible for the death of some of our houseless neighbors in Portland, Oregon. However, his policies are responsible for the death of some of our houseless neighbors in Portland, Oregon during the ice storm. So while he didn't physically go out and help people freeze to death, his policies did. So there you go. There's the one caveat that I'm going to make to my blanket statement. That being said, he is still the garbage human who lies, and I can't wait to laugh him out of this town. He'll be fine. He's rich, and his daddy got him the job anyway. Probably. I don't know. Fuck him. Back to the show.
Great.
During the ice storm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Remember when he took away tents and blankets?
Yep.
Yeah, no, he got people killed.
Closed down shelters.
Yep.
Yeah.
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 No. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah,
I would love to get a letter to be like, you need to stop this. I'll see you in court. I'd be like, sweet.
Well, anyway, what are we talking about today?
Parking and all things parking related.
Well, today we have some guests that one of them we've had on the show before, and the other one is brand new to us, but they do come as a duo often.
Yeah.
With their creative endeavors. So I think when they are in the green room, as it were, you can tell us more about them.
Yes.
It's...
Do we have a second so I can do a show and tell?
I think really quick, yeah.
So I picked this up today.
Is it like a game?
What's
it's
this?
A new role-playing game.
Ooh.
It's one of those tiny indie role-playing games. It's from Exalted Funeral.
Okay. Oh, I know that company.
Yeah, it's called The Halloween Babysitter.
Not a regular babysitter.
It's got a little comic. As its introductory pages. Your parents convince you to go to a party, and then they left you alone. With the Halloween night, the babysitter is here. There's something strange about her. She stands in the living room with a mask and her box of tools. Saying nothing, but she has a list of chores for you. Clean room, wash dishes, fold clothes, etc. And if you misbehave, she breaks out her bag of tools to do horrible, horrible things to you.
Oh, no.
You are apparently one of many children on Halloween night, and you roll a 20-sided dice to find out what kind of bad kid you are.
Oh.
And some of these are fucking great.
Please tell me there's a list of the bad kid archetypes.
Oh, yeah. No, it's... If you roll a one, you are literally possessed by a demon. Number six. I love number six in particular. You just won't stop singing.
Wow.
Yep. So it's you are basically one of these types of kids, and because of this, you're getting the worst. You're getting an immoral serial killer babysitter. that's going to take care of you or take care of you on mm-hmm. Halloween night. It's great. So I picked this up. Definitely impulse buy. I look forward to running all of you through it sometime around Halloween time.
Or we just do a real play on the show. It looks like a
short
one.
Or we do that. That'd be fun. We probably could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we have our guests on, just that reminded me of the movie Babysitter.
The Babysitter?
The Babysitter.
Yeah. Which for some reason, here's how my brain worked. Because I couldn't remember the actors. I couldn't remember her name in it, but I remember she had blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Which then made me think that yesterday I watched Ready or Not.
Samara Weaving.
Yeah, her I know, but she's not in the baby. That's not her, is it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, for fuck's sake, is it?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, well, then my brain's
you
can, firing.
You know, because she has a very distinctive scream.
That's why I was going to bring up on Ready or Not. I forgot how good her scream is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I love Ready or Not so much when she yells out, fucking rich people. if you haven't seen Ready or Not, go see it and then watch Guns Akimbo afterwards. To get
that one, I still need to see.
I did
that
not
one.
Remember that that was her in that.
Yep,
that's such, that movie was so much more fun than I thought. I thought it was just really dumb and just like
she gets her fingers blown off. She's like, "What was my fucking Saturday night?"
All right,
that's enough of that. Let's invite our amazing guests on.
Yeah, so we, as in you two, first introduced listeners to Sophie Somaroff when you interviewed her about her submission to the 2022 Portland Horror Film Festival, Love is a Fire, which we all loved, and I'm sure the listeners did too. Today, she is going to be joining us along with frequent collaborator Selena Bernstein to talk about their latest project, Ride, Baby, Ride, a horror short about a lecherous demon inhabiting a young woman's 1978 Camaro.
Welcome, Selena and Sophie. How are you? Oh, did we lose
sound? Hang on. Do you got it?
Nope.
No? We can see both of you. We just can't hear you yet.
Hold, please.
And this is why we're going to pick up ASL.
I don't know how good that is for podcasts.
Yeah.
One of us is echoey.
One of us is. Let's see if it's me.
Cable, neither of us had our Zooms on mute.
Oh, that's it.
Okay. Oh, boy. That's
all right.
But I think I heard them this time, though.
Yes.
Yeah, they're coming through.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Sorry. There's one little setting that I thought Zoom kept every time.
Mm-hmm.
It never does. And I always forget I have to go in and tell it, like, yes, we're using the preamp.
Anyway. Yeah, there have definitely been moments where I'm like, I'm a Zoom expert, and then quickly am humbled by the...
There's nothing better than when you log in because you have an interview or you have a face-to-face and you're like, oh, I've given myself 10 minutes. It'll be great. It'll be chill. I can get a coffee or a water or whatever. As soon as you activate Zoom, you get a, we've made more changes to make your Zoom experience better. And you're like, you motherfuckers.
There
is no escaping.
You didn't make it better.
Zoom is not a sponsor.
No.
We give them money and we're not sure why.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, Sophie, it's great to have you on again. Good to see you again.
Great to see you. Yes, Selena. Nice to meet.
Yeah.
Denise, I hadn't met you before.
I was really looking for.
Was it?
I was out of town or something. I forget.
Now,
but
was it for Guignol that you premiered this film in Portland, or the Horror Fest?
The Horror Fest.
Okay.
And you were
here for it.
Okay. I was at the Horror Fest and I watched it.
But we talked to Sophie months after.
You're right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And I had such a great time. I was like, got to come back and bring Selena, who you've only seen before in her work in the movies, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. not as the flourishing, incredible person that she is as both an actor and producer and many other things. So we're so happy to be here.
Yeah, this was
Sophie,
great.
Sophie, remind me to pay you for saying that.
No,
I just thought you worked for compliments.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically.
For now.
So where do we want to start? Like brimming with all of these different thoughts after watching Ride, Baby, Ride, and also learning how many films you two have created together. Let's I guess start at the beginning. For this film, how did this project come into fruition?
It's a funny story. So Love is a Fire premiered at Portland Horror years ago. And that was actually, so Love is a Fire was my first horror movie, and Portland Horror was the first horror festival I'd ever been to.
Oh, cool.
And I like, because the film was premiering there, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Portland and I'm going to do literally nothing but attend every single screening that was at Portland Horror the day that I'm in Portland. I was there for like 18 hours, did those insane flights, like in at 8 a.m. and out at 6 a.m. the next day. And I literally just like sat in the Hollywood Theater and then the other like satellite theater where Portland Horror. Yeah, and just watched like 13 hours of horror movies, which was like really intense and terrifying as someone who at that point was not really into horror. And I just felt like I exited that day like a changed person. I got back, I got off my, you know, got out at LAX, went home and immediately sat down and wrote the first draft of Ride Baby Ride,
which I sent
like the next day.
I
gotta go back.
I know so many filmmakers and storytellers that like, yeah, I can appreciate horror, but it's not what I want to do. And then they do one, especially when they sit in the audience and you just hear that reaction, the gasp or the, oh no, or the awkward laugh. And there's something that just kind of, I feel like it's a switch.
Mm-hmm.
Cable smiling because he's the haunter in him is already
the word you want is visceral. Once you experience people's visceral reactions to like horror and disgust and fear, and you played even a tiny part in that, it's you kind of can't go back.
It's hard to go back. Yeah,
it's an addictive feeling for sure.
Yeah. The immediate gratification of like, I mean, immediate, not that it obviously takes a long time to make a movie, but like sitting in a theater and knowing did people were scared or affected because it like elicits such a strong, loud vocal response was quite thrilling. And so that was the beginning. Thank you, Gwen and Brian, for Portland Horror, because it was really like.
I feel like that there was a theme of that particular year. There were a lot of, this is my first horror movie, this is my first horror short, this is my first festival for a lot of the filmmakers that were there. And for being the first time doing that at all, there were so many incredible pieces that came out of the 2022 year.
Yeah, it was a really good weekend of shorts.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was fantastic. So, what made you think? I know, a car, because I feel like that's actually a very specific subgenre of a subgenre, the demonic or possessed car. And I personally, I kind of fucking love that. Especially in America, the car represents freedom and movement and getting away, and it's the machine you control and it's empowering. So I love it when the machine's like, no, I am in control. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, so when I wrote it, I had not seen Christine or Titan actually, but prior to, though, of course, those movies ended up being really important formal influences as far as our approach to making it. But I think honestly, I mean, I'm from New York. I didn't learn how to drive until I decided I was moving to LA. Like, I was like, cars, not for me. Don't know anything about them. I'm still driving my, like, you know, Facebook Acura MDX from 2005 that, like, is on its last legs and definitely makes some weird, creepy sounds that I don't understand. And I think that maybe that was, like, my subconscious questioning, like, this is my cry for help for someone, find me a mechanic who can help me figure out my current decrepit car that is not as cool as a 70 Camaro. But I like what you said about it having this connotation of, you know, the great expanse, that like the open road that you can access in your car. And I think a big thing with our movie was making it feel as claustrophobic and like the car does never move, it's just in a garage pretty much the whole time. But I don't know, I'm curious, Selena, when you, like, I don't know, when you first read it, if you had any specific connotations in your car experience.
In my car experience, I mean, we both came from big cities. I grew up in Paris, so even less of a driving city than New York. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was something, though, for me that really clicked when I did move to LA and learn how to drive, where all of a sudden I had this feeling of like, oh, I could go anywhere at any time, like on the drop of a hat. And I think that feeling of freedom is something that appeals to so many about cars. And I don't know, I feel like that's what I really tapped into, that love of those cars and having to fight against the demon that right. exists within it.
I like that. So Love is a Fire, the horror was definitely body horror, and it was from within, and this is definitely more the external horror where there is a thing that is attacking. Shoot, I had a question in here. I think it's more about what did you think about doing that jump from one type of horror to another type of horror?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, because this is now my second horror mm-hmm. movie,
last.
In general, with every short that I do, I feel like I ask myself the question of like, what is something I haven't tried before, or like, what is a new thing that I want to learn and get out of the experience of making it. And if for Love is a Fire, you know, that was because we had been making like musical comedies before this. So it was a bit of a jump to go to body horror, but it was a fun one. But so Love is a Fire, I had wanted to learn how to direct intimacy, and I wanted to learn how to direct horror. And then coming out of that, the challenge that I post myself in this one was like, how do I do something with that's very, because Love is a Fire is more of a slow burn, no pun intended or pun intended. I knew I wanted to make a movie that was a little bit faster pace and energetic and fun. And I think just the idea that came out of it was like that Selena's character against this thing, and how much of a really interesting technical and storytelling challenge it was to like make the movie feel dynamic and exciting in spite of us being in like essentially a tiny space with just a character doing her thing. And so that externalization was really important to like finding the energy of the movie. And that was something we really leaned into in the process of finding the car as well.
Yeah, I do see where that came. Mm-hmm. All of those points came across.
It's so interesting that you describe Love is a Fire as more of a slow burn, because I feel like I had to watch Ride Baby Ride more than once to get a better appreciation for it. But also, I've seen more of your work now, and you've already touched on a bunch of these elements already. The musical comedy stuff. And not body horror, but like body and intimacy centric themes are really prevalent in all of your work that I've seen thus far. And I just really wanted to know, is that an intentional focus, or does it just come from, you know, like being a woman? Because again, like the car is pretty, it's not just demonic, it's kind of a creep. As are the men in the opening scene. They're definitely creeps.
Yeah.
And of course, Love is a Fire deals with sex and intimacy. And I don't want to spoil some of your other short films for the audience, because I think they should go out and watch them. I really recommend that they do. But tell me more about why you continue to gravitate towards these similar themes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny, like my first short was about my that is available on Dust, the like sci-fi YouTube channel. I don't know if you watch that one, which is like bodily adjacent, but maybe a little bit more thematically tied to it. But that was about inspired by my grandmother's experience in a home for unwed mothers while she was pregnant with my mom. And it was kind of a sci-fi take on that. And I think that going into my first night in LA and my worst night in LA, which are masturbating and pooping respectively. I don't know. There's definitely thematic ties and things that have been of interest to me as far as both my own experiences or familial experiences, but also things that, you know, definitely you're starting to see more of on screen. And they're like, a lot of my favorite movies are also about like deal with what is gross and uncomfortable about being a human or being a woman or, you know, being whoever, you know, whatever, whoever you are. But it's, but I've always been drawn to those things about oneself that maybe you're less, I guess, comfortable with or less open to talk about. And at first it was really fun to do it in this comedic setting where you're like, you know, talking about all these things that maybe you've been told are taboo, which I think, you know, I had interpreted some of those things as, I don't know. But then kind of expanding beyond that, I think it can be really empowering and really fun to take control of those things that maybe you've interpreted as gross or lesser than or whatever. And I think that is a big part of the characters that I feel most excited by, like people who feel really comfortable in themselves and feel really comfortable, not just in spite of the gross aspects of themselves, but sometimes because of the gross mm-hmm. aspects of themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I don't know, there's a lot to mine in there. And I think there's still a lot that I'm curious about and thinking about mm-hmm. with regards to things related to that. And yeah, want to keep kind of digging in and finding more.
Going to ask you, Selena, specifically, and then like performing in these stories, like how does that work for you? And like, do you channel a lot of your own personal experiences?
I think, this is exactly what I was going to say, that as an actor, it's been such a gift to be not only given these roles that explore these kind of grosser, less often talked about things, but also to get to explore it over time through so many different projects, because I think it really, for me at least, part of why I do this is to get to experience and explore things that might be difficult or uncomfortable to express in real life. And there's so much that we don't talk about or dance around, and getting to like dive into these uncomfortable things time after time in all these various ways, it feels like just such a freeing exercise. And I don't know, I feel like there's been so many different faces of this that Sophie and I have gotten the chance to explore together, including some unreleased, potentially never to be released material. But it's just, it's also so fun to explore these things with such a close collaborator and friend, and not just Sophie, but the rest of the community and collaborators we've built out are people that we feel so, I think, close to at this point and comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And I think that is also such a, it's so cool to have this safe container where you can explore all of these things.
Yeah.
I like that phrasing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so, considering you were locked in a container
before. Yes, yeah.
I mean, it's a very short film, but I know how long it takes, and I know how restrictive filming in a car is. I think the only one that got around it was years ago during Drag Me to Hell, the fight scene in the car in the garage there. There's an entire featurette. They carved that car into like 20 pieces so it could be removed to put cameras in and stuff. But
it's insane.
That's amazing.
No one has a budget for that.
Wanted to do. Our Camaro did not come apart more than it was already coming apart.
That's just Camaros. Yeah.
Speaking to cinematography, your work does have a lot of like really good. What's the word I'm looking for? It seems like you guys are using some pretty good camera equipment and lighting, but it sounds as though you tend to work with smaller budgets. So what's the process there?
Yeah, it is tricky. But really the source of it is having incredible collaborators who, you know, are able to kind of make do with the resources that we have. So we have been fortunate that over our past productions, for the most part, they've been able to increase in budget level and scale incrementally as we've continued on. But you know, it is absolutely always a challenge. The Love is a Fire and most of, if not all, my work up until that point was shot by one of our closest friends named Matt Kletner, who's still one of Selena's housemates and is, you know, like we all went to college together and were buds in film class together. And he's just incredible and was, you know, always down to make do with what we had for each of the things that we were making. For my first night in LA and my worst night in LA, like those were tiny because those were just like made essentially when, you know, like I was still like looking for a job when I first moved to LA. We were just like scrambling, doing it in like Selena's house. And then Ride Baby Ride, we were super fortunate to be able to expand to a slightly larger scale than Love's a Fire, which was through a partnership with Movie Maker Magazine Production Services, like who we met at Film Quest, which is a wonderful genre fest in Provo. And we connected with their team over there, and they were able to help us kind of stretch the money we had and provide us with some really, really important resources. And on Ride Baby Ride, we worked with a different cinematographer named Gemma Dahl-Grossman, who was absolutely amazing and used what was pretty special equipment in order to shoot the car in a dynamic way. So we shot on a camera called the Sony Venice, which has a pretty unique capability where you can separate the camera body from the lens. And so your camera goes from being this big to being like this big, attached cables to your camera body that's sitting outside of the car. So it was like a crazy, you know, we never would have been able to afford that or access that had we not been working with Movie Maker, and they were able to kind of help us get access to that type of equipment that was really important to be able to, you know, not just shoot the car in one way because we were able to get a tiny camera in all these little places. And yeah, Selena, well acquainted with that camera in the car.
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, how many hours were you, especially during when the belts grab you and you have to maintain that energy after take after take?
We did a full day of shooting inside the car, pretty much. So that was, I wasn't tied up the entire time, but it was a very intense day. And I think that, honestly, you know, maybe I wouldn't have answered this question in the same way right after the shoot, but in retrospect, I think the exhaustion really contributed to the performance. And, I mean, you know, a lot of yelling during that day, a lot of just pushing myself kind of past the point of where where I'm supposed to be in terms of energy. And I think that really came through in the performance at the end of it. But yeah, it was mostly, I mean, me and our cinematographer, Gemma, and sometimes a third person, our lovely hand. So that was a little bit cramped in there, but we made it work. I did have a lot of bruises afterwards, but.
Yeah. No, I've so many actors who have performed in horror movies always add the, I think being exhausted kind of helped. Because eventually,
I think you
like,
have to tell yourself that, or
yeah,
or you'll go crazy.
Yeah, right, yeah. And it's always the, no, I love it. But in the moment, you're like, I hate all of you so much. Can we just be done?
I think that's just filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've done enough. Yeah, it is exhausting. That's for sure. Long, long days.
But Selena had such an incredible energy on set. Just have to brag about you for a second, Selena. Because Selena, like, so that day was our last day. And the day before that day, so we did all the interior car stuff all on our last day. But on our second to last day, which was our middle day, we shot 3 days, was the day of the window smash and the blood pouring out of the car at the end and all the wides of the car and all of this crazy stuff. And like all these things were going wrong, mainly the window break, which is this incredible, it was like the craziest thing ever. We only had 2 panes of glass and we knew that her smashing the window was going to be this like really important climactic moment. And one of the panes of glass broke before we started shooting it.
Oh no.
And we were like, what are we going to do? And our incredible special effects supervisor slash production designer, Shane Bannon, who also played the hand, was gluing it back together, trying to figure out how to make it work. And wow. Selena was just like, guys, everyone relax. Give me the glass. Roll the camera. I'm gonna do it. And like, that's literally what she did. She just like, took what was this incredible moment of chaos of all of us being like, how are we gonna get this? And just exuded what I know wasn't effortless, but felt like this effortless grace amidst our insane horror movie, crazy tense performance. It is honestly, that's my bragging Selena anecdote.
I think sometimes you just, there's this feeling within yourself that tells you you have to be the voice of confidence and delusion. And that's what it was in that moment.
Yeah.
I like that those are the 2 things paired, confidence and delusion.
Right.
You got to have both.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes.
The same, they're 2 sides of the same coin.
That's, you're not.
So many films, especially lower budget independent films, I think it just comes in. There's eventually a moment where the performer kind of runs the numbers in their head and goes, yeah, I can take this hit. Let's just do it. I'm just going to jump. I'm just doing it. Just make sure the camera's rolling because I'm only doing it once.
Yeah. I mean, I could just tell that, I don't know. I could just tell that everything that was going on might work, but I don't know. I think sometimes the adrenaline takes over and allows you to see a path through. And, you know, obviously I could be the I was the only person who could be there and potentially do anything to make the situation better. And so I was just like, I guess I have to and I will do it and it'll be fine.
Right. It's like it was Jamie Lee Curtis in the first of the new Halloweens. The part where Michael like punches through the window and is like choking her. Mm-hmm. They had it all planned. Eventually she's like, just choke me. And if you see me start to black out, yell cut. Like, I'm tired of this setup. Just terrify me and I will do it. And they're like, okay, it's Jamie Lee Curtis. We're not going to tell her how to fucking act like Laurie Strode. All right. You know?
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if horror more than any other genre breeds that sort of, you just got to get it done. Like, it's grueling and we're working with less than we planned on or, you know, started out with, but I know we can make it work. We just got to push through.
There's definitely, yeah.
Do either of you find that to be true?
Definitely. I think, well, I think it has to do with the people. Mm-hmm. Because there's such a will to get things done. And so many of the kind of car coming to life things that we did, it was like 90% practical effects. And we had considered getting a person who was an expert at such things, and it just ended up being totally impossible on our budget. And so we came together with our close friends, our collaborators, and we just decided that it was going to be okay and we were going to figure it out together. And I think that mentality is very emblematic of people in the horror community who are willing to just think through ways to do these totally crazy things. Because in a drama, you know, you're never going to have to solve the problem of, like, how does the hand come out? So by necessity, there are these impossible situations that that you have to solve. And sometimes you just have to decide that it's going to work out. I feel like one of those moments was we didn't know exactly how we were going to get the lock to go down. Mm. We kept racking our brains. We were like, how's that going to happen without, you know, seeing something, we'll do fishing line or something. And then on the day we realized, like, hang on, there's a key on the outside that we could just turn the key.
Yeah.
And sometimes the solutions present themselves to you, mm-hmm. and the problems want to be solved when you put yourself in that position of saying, like, okay, I got to figure this out. Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, in everyone's defense, that's not a mechanism that most people nowadays would even know exists. So
I'm sure there might have been a point in the script where, like, yeah, I don't know how. Well, we'll just hit the button.
The keys, the only keys I feel like I knew existed were welded into the ignition. So I did not.
That's another barrier.
It was a puzzle to be found. But
I will say, for a split second, the door locks kind of terrified me. I was like, oh no. Because as a youth who cut himself on the arm when someone had just unscrewed it and it was just the threads, I was like, that's going to cut something. Either hurt, something's going to get cut by that. I was like, is it going to be like a greater moment? I'm like, oh, here it comes.
Seatbelts. Yeah, spoilers.
Yeah. I remember watching them, like, and part of me was like, that would totally work. Yep. You could totally cut a seatbelt with that, actually.
Yep.
100%.
That was another one of those things. Like, we were so like, what is she going to cut the seatbelt with? We were trying to put another screw closer to her. And then it was just like, oh, yeah, this car just has this screw instead of one of the door locks, because that is the nature of this car. So we will use this car in all its glory as it gives us all of these opportunities.
I wonder if that means that, like, the sub-genre of possessed car is going to go away as classic cars become fewer and fewer.
No, because as cars get more electronic, you're going to get the Ghost in the Machine car now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not as exciting
because it'll be electric cars, and electric cars don't roar at you when they're angry and lit. It's going to go like,
But they will trap you inside and drown you in a lake.
Only if you're,
what's that?
Only if you're Mitch McConnell's sister-in-law.
Or the Tesla light show. Have you guys ever seen that?
No.
That's
really weird. So you can click. I don't have it. I have my 2005 Facebook. But I was in a friend's Tesla, and apparently you can click a button and the car, like, comes to life and flashes its lights and opens the trunk and closes it and plays music like it's dancing. And that, to me, feels absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Like, especially that big screen, you could have like a digital demon just
like they program like that into the car in manufacturing
factory settings.
Yeah.
Okay. No.
But nope. Not an easy emergency release system.
No.
Cool. No. Cool. 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 No. Cool. Cool. Cool.
Priorities.
They have their priorities.
Yeah. 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 Well.
Well, they're too busy watching the Cybertruck rust out now.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh God.
Sorry, I just popped.
Yeah, let's not give him any more airtime. Yeah. I know that the first time that we had Sophie on, she talked at length about what a joy it is to collaborate with you, Selena. I'd like to hear from you what you've found. Like, you've talked a little bit about it with other answers, but what are some of your favorite things about collaborating with Sophie?
I think at this point, it's just... there's such a comfort in our collaboration, mm-hmm. and a shorthand. And, you know, for example, the moment with the window pane, I don't know if that's something that ever would have occurred if it was a fresh collaboration, because, you know, there's a million things going on for a director. But the fact that in that moment, I said something crazy and she was able to just trust me with it, that spoke volumes to, I think, the relationship that we've established. And I mean, as an actor, I think so often you're fighting against everything and you're hearing no, 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 and you're getting to do only things that are not what you want to do. And I just feel so grateful to have found someone who time and time again, we really connect on the material that we both want to make. And I just, every time I can't wait for the next time. And I think that there's nothing more important than finding your people. And Sophie is just one of those people that I am going to put my claws into and never let go of.
Aw, you guys. I have an addendum to that question, or like I just want to tack on. How has your collaborative and creative relationship changed or evolved now that you also share production credits?
Yeah, I think that... to a certain degree, that aspect has always been a part of our collaboration, just as friends who were also roommates for a time period. Like when we were shooting Love is a Fire, we were living together at that time. And so whether it wasn't in an official producer capacity, but necessarily all the problems from set, from post, would follow us home and we would talk about them and solve these problems partially together. And I think that making the jump to being a producer in an official capacity this time, I think just allowed for that to be even greater and more powerful. I think that also in particular this year, in addition to Ride Baby Ride, I have another short film on the festival circuit that I also acted in and produced. And so this is kind of a new phase for me, where I'm taking on more of that role in an official capacity. And it's not something that I've gotten the chance to do with new collaborators yet, but it's something that I really love. I don't know. I'm such a problem solver, both in terms of kind of figuring out practical issues, and then also just there's nothing I love more than like getting a fresh cut of a short and watching it. I don't know. I always question when a cut goes out to people how they can not like literally open their computer and watch it right that second, because for me it's so exciting. There's nothing I want to do more than see like, is it there? Did this problem get solved? Is the magic happening? Is it coming together? And it's just been such a gift to be able to really dive into that process.
Now that you've shared so many facts about your collaborative relationship, it occurs to me that the fact that you guys work on these independent projects and short films together is part of why that collaboration and that relationship is possible. And that makes me wonder if either of you see yourselves moving into features and working with bigger production companies where maybe those relationships might not be as accessible to you as they are in your current working relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's something that we're both working towards, both independently and then together, in the sense that we have these projects together that hopefully will lead to greater things. That's something that, you know, the idea of losing control on a potentially larger project does sound scary, but it also sounds like maybe a great problem to be having because you're evolving and growing and getting access to these new things. And so I guess I can't speak to the nature of what that challenge would be like until we get to that point. But I also think that having this experience producing together gives you also this shared language of how to communicate. Because even though Sophie and I have this shorthand that we've developed over the years, we're constantly bringing new collaborators into the fold. And you have to learn how to communicate your vision with those people and give and take notes. And I think that in addition to all the practical filmmaking skills that we've learned over the years, those are also skills that we've been honing. And hopefully we could put them to good use at some point.
Yeah, and I think there's so much, I mean, to kind of go off of what you were saying, and I'm trying to remember, what was the phrase that you said earlier, Selena, when you were like, this, we're in a little bubble of people, I don't remember, it was so good.
We'll a protective container.
I have no idea container. What I'm
saying. Protective container. A protected container. Mm-hmm. Yes. Our protected container is the perfect place to be kind of cultivating, at least how I feel, like an opportunity for me to cultivate my creative voice. But I also, and learn kind of what I prioritize and how I like to feel on a set and the types of sets I like to be on. And the types of sets that when I am the director, producer, I get to, you know, kind of create with the other people who are there kind of helming the project. And I hope that the practice of learning those things right now will just continue into whatever eventual larger scale project for us gets to be, because the hope is that even in those circumstances, you do have your people there, or you're meeting new people who then become your people. Mm-hmm. You know, like every movie is like creates such a tight knit community within it, or a family within it, in an ideal scenario, I think. And it's been really nice to be able to practice what we love to do in our tight-knit small circle at this moment, but to just expand it feels like the greatest opportunity.
Those are great answers.
Indeed.
I know you guys have alluded to some of this already, but do you are there any of your projects that are in the works or coming soon that you're able to talk about with us now?
We have a little short, actually, right now. That we're editing, that is super tiny. We shot it on 16mm, and it is called Needle. We're going back to body horror. It's about Selena sewing.
Oh, I'm squicked out already. Okay.
Yeah.
I saw the image, like, Your website's great because if you hover over the title, it gives you a single image from the work, and just that pin in the fingernail.
So we became friends working in a costume shop together. Like that was going way back. That was like, we were friends before that, but that was like really our, like where we became very close and spent hours and hours together. And I've definitely sewn through my finger by accident.
I haven't.
That's amazing.
Looking at the stills for Needle, by the way, I can't help but notice that there's a garment that is very reminiscent of the golden ball gown from Beauty and the Beast. So that would make it your second time referencing Beauty and the Beast in one of your shorts.
I will say the golden ball gown Beauty and the Beast reference, I hope that the movie lives up to whatever connotation that carries, because honestly I just like was given a bunch of free golden fabric and like I have no money to make this movie, like I made the dress, we had a couple dresses and I made them for the movie and I was just like, I'm gonna use the fabric that I have, but it is very Belle, and it'll be interesting to watch it once it's done along with my worst night in LA and see if there's a certain thematic Beauty and the Beast element.
Yeah. Turn it into a little double feature.
Yes.
It's a tale as old as time.
Thank you.
You gotta time those just right. It's kinda
That's right. Will you be at this year's Portland Horror Festival?
I would love to go back. I am not sure yet though. Okay. But I hope to be back. I had a great time doing karaoke at Chopstick.
We never make it to that.
We never make it to that. Well,
gotta come. It was the best.
Done.
Great.
Was it last year?
Was what last year?
With Alex and the other.
No, that was 2022. No, that was 2022. That was the same
See, that's
year.
How much I still haven't gotten over that.
Well, weekend. You know what throws you off is that part of that festival happened at the Clinton, and we're used to going to the Clinton for Guignol.
Okay, that's what my brain is.
And also, we, because of many, many other things that we were doing in 2023, we missed all of this last year. Like, we missed the Portland Horror Film Fest. We missed most of, I think, H.P. Lovecraft last year.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we
I was being kicked
we'll get
out of
back
the house.
On track this year.
I was being kicked out of the house.
Yes, right. Yes, you were.
I was living in a van for a while.
Anyway, 2023 was a year.
It was a year, yeah.
But, well, when you make it back up here, and Selena, if you come up here as well, please let us know. We will make sure that we take you around and show you Portland.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
That would be amazing.
We love being kind of...
Unofficial
tour guides for the city. It's like, no, we have to go here. We have to go. It's like, but I've heard about this. Yeah, that's where all the tourists go. We're going here.
That's giving us the inner scoop. Uh-huh.
Yeah. We will. We will hit you up as soon as
fantastic.
Excellent. Maybe that can be like our next venture, guys, is Portland's tour guides to the stars and filmmakers of horror. I don't know, but with a snappier title than that. So you can workshop that for me.
Yeah, work on that.
Yeah.
That'll do. That'll do.
Yeah. That was a lot like the Zoolander Center for kids who can't read good in one.
Yep.
No, I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, Sophie, Selena, thank you so much for popping on the show. It was fantastic having you on again. We'll have you on again soon, hopefully. With Needle.
And please keep in touch with us. Let us know what you're working on, and we'll be happy to bring you on and talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And congratulations on another great film.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I am really glad that Sophie reached back out to us. And like that's the kind of relationship that we want to have. We want to meet these people who are doing brand new things in horror, which we all love.
Yes.
So that we can go, yes, please come talk to us about it. We'll give you a platform to talk more about it.
Is it too late to become just strictly a horror podcast, you guys?
No. I think we go through cycles where, like, for 3 months we're solid horror, and then 3 months we're solid superheroes, and 3 months we're solid games. And
yeah, we haven't done it. I don't think we've done a long chunk of any one category besides horror in probably 2 years.
Horror is definitely true. I mean, to an extent, sci-fi a bit. Because we tend to like kind of the same sci-fi trope shows and stuff.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean, Star Trek.
And I mean, part of that is aided by the fact that like February is Women in Horror Month. And in the summer, there's the Portland Horror Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And in the fall, there's Guignol Fest.
And H.P. Lovecraft.
H.P. Lovecraft. Yeah. That's Lovecraft. The one I meant, actually.
And then we get into the spooky season in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is February just Women Filmmaker Month? Did they drop the horror? I feel like they
kind of dropped the whole thing largely because it got across exactly what it meant to.
Right.
And suddenly it just became women in film.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you're actually paying attention to women in film and you're not paying attention to what month it is. That's great.
Right.
So
Norm has a quick comment. I can't wait for y'all to review Alien Romulus. I'm just excited to see it.
I still haven't seen the trailer. Or teaser, or whatever
it is. I literally heard about it for the first time this
weekend.
We'll
watch trailers when we're off the show.
I did, for a split second, got my hopes up that I'm like, really? We're crossing over...
Yeah.
We're crossing over Star Trek and Aliens
now.
That's great. That's, oh, not that you're just... Romulus is...
No, not that.
Okay, fine. I think it's... But back to your point, Denise, I think it's because... Of anything in the past few years, the thing that keeps us coming back and being passionate about what we're talking about on the show is horror.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Like,
right.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time throughout the year on horror, more so than any other subcategory of our nerd shit. And I'm like, maybe this is all we should do.
I mean, I would... Again, we'll talk about it later. I wouldn't mind dialing down to more of a niche. The thing that's always been hardest for this show, especially now... Well, by now, I mean the last fucking decade. Is we're still... I don't mean this in a bad way. We're still a catch-all generic pop culture show. And when the show started, that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's everywhere. We don't have a niche kind of thing. I think the other thing that helps with horror is it's got the... From a practical stance, it has the cheapest buy-in. Mm-hmm. If we're a gamer podcast, we got to commit to playing games and buying the games and reviewing the games. Regardless of what kind of games they are.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, no one's giving us free games.
And there are so many...
Not to start.
Right.
Right, so we would still have a buy-in before...
Yeah, you've got a six-month buy-in to show game developers or game companies an ROI that they'll go, oh yeah, here.
Yeah.
And here's a brand new copy of our $150 game.
And none of us have the bandwidth for that.
And so many, that would require a lot more off-camera work.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many other people who are already doing that and are doing a great job. Like last week's guest?
Yes. Like Alex Hart.
Yes.
Oh, I was like, last week's guest? They weren't a horror guest.
No.
Right.
We're talking about something else right now.
Yep.
Might
I suggest a game?
Wrong niche. Because that's too much money.
Although, speaking of horror, because we got to wrap up here pretty soon, but that's a good tease for next week.
Yes.
We are... go ahead.
We have another returning guest next week. Next week, we are speaking with Anastasia Elfman, who stars in the horror movie Bloody Bridget, mm-hmm. directed by Richard Elfman.
Yep.
She's...
big time horror fan.
Oh man, is she ever.
And are you the one that told me, like, not only is she a great like horror fan, but like she's like you with the Universal Monsters? That
she loves.
And her birthday's after Lon Chaney's birthday?
Her birthday is Lon Chaney's birthday.
That's so cool.
Lon Chaney Sr. She shares the birthday with Lon Chaney Sr., which is April 1st. We are having her on April 2nd.
Oh.
And she's over the moon to talk to us about Lon Chaney Sr. and horror in general. Like, she's, like, her CV includes being, or doing practical effects for horror movies.
Right.
That was, like, her entry was costume design, production design, special effects, makeup effects.
That's cool.
And going that really route cool. into now she's acting in movies.
I feel like next week we should put like a black and white and a film filter over all of us.
I mean, we can.
Yeah, just for the just for the lulls.
But yeah, she said that she's...
No one says that anymore.
I know.
Yeah, she's really excited to meet with us again.
Yeah, yeah. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of good interviews lined up.
I do my Lon Chaney homework over the next week.
Well, you saw Phantom of the Opera and you said you're like, eh. Was it the black and white one?
Yeah.
No, I didn't
love it, but I appreciated learning all of the influences that it had on the musical, the 1984 horror, which is my personal favorite, mm-hmm. near and dear to my heart.
And horror in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's out there streaming, I think, kind of easy to find.
It's like on Tubi or Free.
I'm just saying watch London After Midnight if you can before we interview Anastasia.
London
After Midnight. 1927. Is it complete? It's not completely. It's not a lost film, is it?
No, not the band.
I think it's still out there, is it? Because I know The Man Who Laughs is lost forever. Who straight up inspired...
The Joker?
The Joker, yeah. There's images, but I think the movie has been lost.
It is and it isn't. The last known copy of the film was destroyed in the 1965 MGM vault fire, making it one of the most sought-after lost silent films. In 2002, Turner Classic Movies aired a reconstructed version.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I've seen that.
Produced by Rick Schmidlin, using the original script and numerous film stills to recreate the original plot.
Yep.
What was another movie that that some of us watched last year when we were doing the 100 films thing?
Probably Nosferatu. Because the Stoker family won the case and they were ordered to destroy all copies, but then some were preserved.
No. I think it was Vampire.
With a Y?
Yes.
Because I have the
where it's criteria like literally one. Cobbled together, so some of it is in German, like some of the caption cards. What do you call them?
Title cards.
Title cards.
Yeah,
that makes more sense.
God, he did so many movies. He didn't. I mean, because he didn't live very long.
Who, Lon Chaney Sr.?
Yeah, 1883 to 1930. For him, it just became like, how many times can I alter how I look to people not recognize me?
Yep.
Right.
Was it The Man of a Thousand Faces? Which is like his nickname.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, and I remember reading about all of that when I was in elementary school. Like, I was obsessed with trying to recreate the makeup styles that Lon Chaney Sr. did and... like all of the Universal monsters.
Yeah, the guy who did Frankenstein.
I think my first monster costume was Dracula when I was like in fourth grade. So
yeah, Jack Pierce. Jack Pierce is the one that all like modern makeup people are like, no, that's where it started. You know, like all of them, they're like, it all started with Jack Pierce when he created the Wolfman or the Frankenstein look. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, cool.
Did we ever end up talking about Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein on the show?
We touched on it, but we didn't really do a big, deep dive into it. We did talk about how like she is such a pop culture icon and exists in the movie for like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know. I think that was a time when I also recommended, if you haven't yet, see Of Gods and Monsters.
I think you did, and I still haven't done that.
It's a wonderful film. Down. Yeah, Brendan Fraser and Gandalf. Yeah, Ian McKellen. Yeah.
And Gandalf.
I was watching a TikTok recently that where someone who's a really big fan was talking about how, like, so not only is the Bride of Frankenstein, like, really iconic, but the romantic pairing as an image of Frankenstein and the bride is really iconic. And she's like, guys, that never fucking happened. She rejects him and never changes her mind.
No, they both die 3 minutes later. Because he's told...
Well, no, she gets away, doesn't she? I thought he sends her away.
No.
And he kills himself and the other guy, Dr. Frank... We belong dead.
We belong dead.
Oh, I'll never forget that. That's the best part of that film. Over. Yeah. No, but I thought... What I remember is that he tells Victor Frankenstein, or whatever his name is in the movie version, and the bride to get the fuck out of here, save yourselves. But then the other guy who basically convinced Frankenstein to create the bride with him.
Pretorius.
Dr. Pretorius. Dr. Pretorius. He holds Pretorius back and then
Pretorius
he brings
is a monster.
Yes.
Yes.
He brings the building down on himself and Pretorius and he tells him, we belong dead.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
Yeah, because the creature freaks out because he's basically told, like, we're making her for you. Mm-hmm. She will naturally, like, you're both made of the same concept. Of course she's going to love you. And mm-hmm. she sees him and goes, fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, to the monster's credit, once he realizes, oh, she wants nothing to do with me, well, then fuck the world. I'm going. I'm out. I mm-hmm. don't.
Yeah.
The funny thing about Bride of Frankenstein to me is, for as long as I've seen the images from it and as iconic as the bride is, it wasn't until last year that I realized that her hair is red.
Yes.
Oh, is that really?
Yes. It's like when you see the Addams Family set in color.
Yeah. The walls are pink.
Everything's pink and pastels. Because it shows up better as black and white.
Yes, it does.
Well, that makes sense. The poster has red hair.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, I've only seen black and white images of that. I've never seen any like... Yeah.
And I think the actress is Mary Shelley at the beginning too.
At the opening, yeah.
Because they recreate.
Right.
I don't think it's actually her. It's supposed to be.
That's what he meant.
No, the actress who becomes the bride, I think is the woman who's playing Mary Shelley.
Also,
yeah. No, not, okay. It's not meant to be Mary. No.
You left out some words.
It's supposed to be her
and what's his nuts?
Byron and
Lord Byron
and Piercy Shelley.
Yeah.
That's always my favorite thing. It's like, can you imagine being just so tedious and bored with those two dudes that you lock yourself up for a couple weeks and write the first horror film with the first horror book?
And invent science fiction.
I think they all were writing. Like, they're like
they
competing
did.
To
but
write
you,
a story
anyone
at the same time.
Yeah. But
it
you,
is funny. Yes.
And if you know anything about Byron, and to an extent, Piercy Shelley was just, he's just a soft boy. Byron was a dick. And I'm sure Byron was fun in like 1 hour increments at a party. But then you're like, okay, get me the fuck away from Lord Byron. Like, I just can't. He keeps trying to tickle my ear. He feels like an ear tickler.
What must that be like?
I don't know, but he feels like someone to come and go, oh. We should wrap up the
show. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but Percy Shelley took Mary Shelley's last name, right?
No, Shelley is his name. Her maiden name is
Wolfenscroft. It's
Wolstein.
Yeah. It's like Croft. Badass.
Wolstencraft. It's right here.
But I think she keeps it. I think she just kind of adds Shelley to hers. I don't think she...
When the book was originally published, it was published as Mary Shelley, and then later they changed it.
Oh.
They changed the credit on the book.
Because isn't, like, in the scheme of, like, humanity, like, the tradition of a woman taking her husband's name is relatively new?
I mean, it's different in different cultures.
Maybe in Western culture. Because it's like, I know during... Yeah, because it's always like, no, you were just married.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, there was a point in time where people didn't have fucking last names unless they were from, you know, prominent families. You're just like,
or it was
that
their job.
Guy.
You know, what's your last name? Cobbler. That's what you do. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Worf, son of Moog.
That's right. That's a badass name. Well, with that, I am... I should get a closer mic. I am Aron Duran.
I am Bina Reedham.
And I am Cable Hashitani.
We will speak to everybody next week. Bye-bye.